Hey, everybody, this is Anthony W., and welcome to the Daily Reflection Podcast. What I think about with step five is the courage to be honest with somebody. You know, and when I read this, I certainly didn't leap at the opportunity to face who I was. I had no practice of being honest. You know, for so long, I had practiced being who I thought you wanted me to be. Best decision I ever made was to quit drinking. Changed my entire life. The second best decision I made was to work the steps because it changed who I was. And it gave me a relationship with God that I didn't even know I wanted.
Welcome to the Daily Reflection Podcast. My name is Michael Lynn from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
And I'm Lee McGinnis from Leesburg, Virginia.
As members of the recovery community, we created this podcast as a way to provide experience, strength, and hope through the lens of the Daily Reflection book. Each day, we interview members of the recovery community in the hope that their experience may provide inspiration.
We value inclusion and diversity, and we really want to provide a platform for all the voices of recovery. We aren't affiliated with any 12-step or recovery program, but you may hear these mentioned throughout the course of an interview.
Hey, before we get to the show, I'd like to ask a favor. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, it'd be great if you could leave us a comment or a rating. This is going to do a couple of things. It's going to help us expand our reach and improve the show.
We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Hey, Lee, who's in the studio today?
So today is May 13th, and we have Anthony W. here from Middletown, Maryland, and he's here to share his experience, strength, and hope around today's daily reflection, the easier, softer way.
Well, fantastic. Well, Anthony, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we get started in the same way every day. We ask the guests to read the daily reflection for the day. Anthony, would you get us started?
Sure. So today's daily reflection, which is May 13th, is titled The Easier, Softer Way. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. That's from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 72. I certainly didn't leap at the opportunity to face who I was, especially when the pains of my drinking days hung over me like a dark cloud. But I soon heard at the meetings about the fellow member who just didn't want to take step five and kept coming back to meetings, trembling from the horrors of reliving his past. The easier, softer way is to take these steps to freedom from our fatal disease and to put our faith in the fellowship and our higher power.
That's a powerful read. Thanks for reading, Anthony. And before we get started, what's your sobriety date?
My sobriety date is December 16th, 1990.
So as you read this, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's May, right? So we're on step five on the daily reflections. I don't know how many years into my sobriety it took me to figure out that like the daily reflections are set up per month, per steps. But what I think about with step five is the courage to be honest with somebody. You know, and when I read this, I certainly didn't leap at the opportunity to face who I was. I had no practice of being honest. You know, for so long, I had practiced being who I thought you wanted me to be. So I was really nervous about actually being honest with somebody about who I really was.
So it talks about the easier, softer way. Do you feel like after having gone through the steps and step five specifically, do you feel like this is the easier, softer way?
It's definitely way better. I mean, I'll tell you for sure, best decision I ever made was to quit drinking. Changed my entire life. The second best decision I made was to work the steps because it changed who I was. And it gave me a relationship with God that I didn't even know I wanted, didn't even know that I was interested in. And that relationship with God is the easier, softer way. With all the stuff that I was afraid of, I thought it was because I was different. I thought that if you knew what was inside of me, you wouldn't like me. If you knew what was inside of me, you would judge me. And I was really concerned, and this is still in sobriety, right? That you think I sound smart, you think I look fit, that you think I'm a good person. And so getting to the fifth step, the hard part was for me to have the courage to be honest because I just didn't have it. The easier, softer way, it's not an easy path for the 12 steps. It's a spiritual fitness program. It's just like if you want to run a marathon. I mean, you can go out and try to run a marathon and it's going to suck if you're not trained. And you can go out and run a marathon trained and it's going to suck, but you're going to do it. And you're going to be successful because you trained for it. And your performance is going to be different. And you're going to be able to handle the rigor of it differently. And that's what this is. That's what AA is. AA is a spiritual fitness program. And the steps are exercises. they're exercises that teach us how to maintain a spiritual fitness. You know, and step five is really, really important, because what step five did is it has this ridiculous table that makes no sense. It says, I'm resentful at, and you're supposed to put down people's names. And yeah, for me, when I first got here, I told my sponsor, I'm like, dude, I'm not resentful at anybody. I don't know what you mean. Like, that's a complex thing, like where you hate people or something. And he said, you're not? I said, no. And he said, well, do you ever get angry? I'm like, oh yeah, man. Yeah, I'm angry. Yeah. What do you get angry? I'm like, angry at everybody. People that don't know how to use the ATM machine, they piss me off, man. People who drive too slow, they piss me off. He's like, well, then just start your list by I'm angry at. And that started to help me kind of understand that I'm angry at. And so that's the first list, right? I'm angry at because I'm angry at these people because they drive too slow. Affects my what? It affects my how people are going to, I'm going to be late. People are going to think I'm late. And then it's going to affect how I look. And this person in front of me who's driving the speed limit is making me look bad. You know, what's my part? My part is I should have left earlier. And I expect everybody to go at my speed, even when I'm late, right? That's my part. Well, that little exercise I just did is profound, because those are the buttons that drive my entire life. I didn't even know. I was pissed off at people and I was jacked up. And I always use this spring analogy, like there's a spring inside of me. And I'm like, and I have a drink and it's like, right, man, loosen that spring. Oh man, I feel better, you know? But I got alcoholism. So that's not a good solution, because I'm powerless over alcohol. You know, so it's one drink is going to lead to another. It's going to lead to another. It's going to lead to some cocaine, and that's going to be another drink. So this fitness program, the fifth step has another list. It's called the fears list. I'm afraid of. I didn't think I was afraid of anything. Right? I thought I was just some kind of badass. And it ended up when I started to get honest. And after I did the first one, I started to find out that one of the things that pushed my button was what you thought about me. And I talked about that earlier. You know, do you like me? What do you think about me? Am I good enough? Am I smart enough? Yeah, all that stuff. And I was driven by that fear that I wasn't enough a lot. Fear that you weren't going to like me, fear you were going to judge me, fear that you weren't going to respect me. And then the last thing is your sex inventory, right? It's a relationship inventory. What expectations do I put on people? I wouldn't know anything about how to do step 10 if I didn't do step 5 or step 11, because embedded in step 10 and embedded in step 11, it says we continue to look for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Well, how would I know what selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear look like if I didn't do step 5, right? So I didn't learn that push-up. So I can't practice that principle because I didn't do step 5. I didn't know any of this when I got to step 5, right? This is me looking back at the end. But this is how I take guys through the steps now. I take them through the steps as a spiritual fitness program. I tell them where we're going to go. We're going to have a spiritual awakening as a result of steps. And then I talk about how come we have to understand them so you can practice them. But man, that's not what it was like when I first got to step 5. I was terrified.
I love that analogy of the spiritual fitness program. And it even tells us in the big book that what we have is a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of our spiritual fitness or condition. So that analogy leads us nicely into the working of the later steps. So I think I'm going to steal that. So talk to us about what made you even open and willing enough to do these steps in the first place? What was your life like before you got into AA that caused you to be open-minded to these fitness exercises?
Yeah. So when I was growing up, I had that intense spring in me, hyper-competitive, wanting to be the best, wanting to fit in, definitely had the spring. You know, I was jacked up. I was intense. Had that first drink, I think I was around 13 years old, and it just took the edge off me. And I was like, man, this is awesome. And then I discovered I was really good at it. Like, I could drink more than most other guys. They were soft. I know I tell this story about, I was probably about 15 or 16. I was probably about 16. And I was working at, I had this great job. I was a janitor at a daycare center that my mom was in charge of. And so I'd go there at night and I'd drink. And I would get this stuff called Quicksilver. It's like Mad Dog. It's on the same place as Mad Dog. It's just cheap wine. I get a fifth of it and I would drink it while I was working. Maybe smoke a couple doobies. Just go home. Just a normal night for a 16-year-old. And I remember one time one of my boys came over and he's like, yo, man, what are you doing? I said, dude, I'll pick you up one of these fifths of Mad Dog, man. We'll chill. And he drank about half of it and he passed out. And I put him on one of those little baby cots because that's where we were in a little daycare center. And then my other friend, John, called me. He said, yo, what's up? And I said, man, Ben passed out, man. You know, he drank half a fifth of Mad Dog. He's out, man. He's soft. John's like, yo, dude, I'll come over, man. I got a 12 pack and I got a couple doobies. I'm like, great. So I finished my fifth. I finish half of Ben's fifth. I have some beers with John, and then we do the right thing because we're good citizens. We got to get Ben home somehow. So I take Ben's Chevelle. I drive Ben's Chevelle. John follows me in his Camaro. We drive Ben to his house. We drop him off. We run like hell after we knock on his door. We leave the keys there for him and we run back. And then we have, you know, and then we probably had a couple more beers. So I had this huge tolerance from the beginning. So I felt like it was something I was good at. You know, I was good at partying. I could party. You know, I wasn't soft like Ben. Hey, Ben, if you're hearing this, man, I love you, man. So I was in college. I went to college, full athletic scholarship. School always came really easy to me. And drinking and drugging just got worse and worse. It pushed everything else out. Once I started drinking, I knew what was going to happen. I knew drinking was a problem. I was doing a cocaine and meth at that time too. That was very popular where I was going to college. Same thing. Once I started, I could not stop. I would piss myself. I would wake up in very embarrassing situations where I might be in bed with my girlfriend and piss the bed. I would black out a lot. And I knew probably around 20, 21, that alcohol was a problem. I knew I couldn't handle it. I knew I was a mess. And I had no idea what anybody did if they didn't drink. I didn't know what anybody did if they didn't party. You know, I didn't know any of those people. I was 23 and I got really scared. I thought I was going to die. You know, I was waking up. I wasn't paying the electric bill. So the electricity would be off, phone would be off. I wake up at 5 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock at night. I was living in West Philly. And I wouldn't know if it was day AM or PM. You know, it's before we had these digital and we didn't have our phones didn't have the time on it all the time. So, I mean, I would just look at the clock and think I wouldn't know what day, you know. And I just thought to myself, man, I'm 23 years old. I'm just going to die. I'm probably going to have to die. And I was so scared. And my friend John got sober. My friend John, who was just a raging alcoholic, he got sober. I saw something happen to him. I saw him change. I saw his eyes change. And if you've ever seen an alcoholic's eyes change, three things happen. First thing happens is they open their eyes. The second thing that happens is they look you in the eye. And the third thing that happens is their eyes start to shine. Their eyes start to become attractive. Something about them. I know what it is now. It's when God is shining from the inside out. You can feel it. I didn't know what it was then. I just knew he was different. And so in 1988, I called Alcoholics Anonymous in West Philly, and I went to a meeting, the 4021 Club on Walnut Street. And I was 23 years old, and I was scared. I started going to AA. You know, to make a long story short, I went to a lot of AA meetings, and I felt really much better, but I had no interest in the steps, none. And then in 1990, I got married, started graduate school. I started playing soccer again. I mean, I was just kicking, but I was getting to be so huge. Anthony was getting to be so important that I had less and less time for AA. And the spring started again, and the spring was getting real tight inside me. And I wasn't honest with people. I hadn't done the fourth and fifth step. I had gone to a lot of AA meetings. I had gone to IKIPA. I had led AA meetings. I had brought AA meetings to prisons, and I had not done the steps. And what happened to me was I needed a solution. I didn't have a spiritual awakening. And so my solution was to steal prescription drugs from my mother-in-law who had cancer. And so I ended up overdosing in 1990, in December of 1990. And I almost died. And now I was really scared because I thought I was doing pretty good. I honestly thought I was doing okay because my life was so much better and fuller from when I was drinking and drugging. You know, I had come out of that dark basement where I just didn't care if I lived or I died. And now I had this full life. I was married. I was in graduate school and I almost died and I was scared. So I got a new sponsor. His name was Jerry. And I said, look, man, I'm scared. And he said, well, do you want to work the steps? That was in December, 1990. I said, sure. And so we went through the steps together. You know, we got to step three and I was like, Jerry, look, man, I don't understand God. I don't know if I can do this step. I think I have to study like some Eastern religions or something. I got to do a little research. And he said, no, you don't. He said, the only decision you have to make at step three is whether or not you're going to do the rest of the steps. In fact, the only decision you have to make, Anthony, is whether or not you're going to do step four. This is not Theology 101. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to research God. I said, dude, you don't understand. I read the step. It says God as we understand him. I don't understand God. He said, it doesn't make any difference. You're not going to understand God at step three. Just trust the process. Do the rest of the steps. And I thought that was pretty naive of him, but I was scared I was going to die. And so I did. I did step four. I did step five. I did step six, seven, eight, and nine. And I started to understand God. I started to understand God after step nine because that's when there was space inside of Anthony for God to shine. I couldn't do it at step three. There was no way. It was impossible because I was filled with fear and shame and resentment. And I didn't know it was okay to apologize to people. I didn't know it was okay to be accountable. I didn't know it was okay to be human, to be honest with you. I just thought I was supposed to be Superman or a piece of crap. So Jerry got me started on the steps that way. And it was really helpful for me because I have a tendency to overthink things and underdo things. So, you know, I want kind of credit for something, but I don't really want to go through all the suffering to get that credit. So that's how I ended up at step five with Jerry. And I'm going to tell you, when I got to step five with Jerry, Jerry was a very Catholic man. And I was very afraid that Jerry was going to judge me. And there was a couple of things that related to sex. There was an abortion that my girlfriend had when we were 17 that I hadn't talked about, but it really, really tore me up. And so we went through the whole fifth step. I went through the whole fifth step with Jerry. And he said, look, man, is there anything left? And I said, nope. And he said, okay, go sit for an hour. Sit for an hour and reflect and then read step seven and then let me know. And I went for an hour and reflected and I knew I hadn't told Jerry these things and I wouldn't tell him. I knew that before I started. But I had a revelation during that hour, which is I had to tell somebody. So I called the local Catholic church because I knew they took confession. And I said, hey, man, you know, I heard you guys do confession, right? And he's like, yeah, we do it tomorrow. You want to come by? So I did. So I went to a Catholic church and I sat down with a priest and I said, hey, look, I'm doing a fifth step. I didn't want to tell my sponsor this stuff, man. I need to talk. And he said, that's cool. I've heard a lot of fifth steps, man. I said, sit down, please sit down. And so I told him these things and he said, dude, it's all right, man. God loves you. It's okay. He said, you hear about saints? I said, yeah, I've heard about saints. He said, saints are like you. They're just people who fuck things up. They screw shit up and they change. And then they try to do the right thing. There's nothing special about them. And that combined fifth step between those two men really opened up the opportunity for me, to be honest.
It's an amazing story. You touched on a number of things that I can relate to. Number one, I've been to the 4021 Club. I'm from Philadelphia myself. Yeah, I don't know if I know Jerry. I'm curious about Ben. Is Ben sober?
No.
Okay.
I don't think Ben ever had a problem. That's why he's soft, man. I mean, you know, just say if you drink half a fifth Mad Dog and go to sleep, man, you don't have, you can't be, it takes a long time to get to alcoholism.
Right.
But by the way, Jerry, by the time when I did those steps with Jerry, that was at the 87 Club on Clinton Street in East Baltimore. That was my home group then.
Gotcha. Okay. Great. Well, I'm glad you made it out, Anthony, and it's a wonderful story. I'm curious about how you continue in your progress in the program and how you continue to fortify that relationship with your higher power. What's your program of recovery look like today?
So one of the things that happened to me early on in recovery was I got very involved in the institution committee in Baltimore and taking meetings into different types of institutions and prisons. I would go to Baltimore City Jail, Charles Hickey School for the Boys. The Baltimore City Jail. So Baltimore City Jail, I was there every week. Every week I would get there and then another group would have to come in and I would have to get the guys cleared. And then we would go in for the AA meeting. And at least once a month or maybe more, you know, the group wouldn't show up and I'd have to go in by myself. And so I remember I was sitting outside and I said to myself, you know what? I'm not going in there if these guys don't show up because I'm carrying AA. I'm carrying AA. No one's helping me. And I heard this one guy's voice from my home group. His name was Carol. And he always used to say, a commitment is a commitment. Commitment is a commitment. You make a commitment, it's a commitment. It's not when something else comes along, you just change your mind. That's not what a commitment is. And so I was like, I was so pissed off at Carol because his voice was in my head. And so I walked into the prison and I was so resentful that I had to carry AA and nobody was helping me anymore. And I, you know, I was married and I had a baby at home and I had worked all day and I went through the gate and I went through the metal detector. And then I went through the area where the women are, where they're all penned up, where they first get in there and they're all yelling at me and it's disgusting. And I'm like, ah, whatever. Then I go through another metal detector and I finally get upstairs and I'm late. And a guy looks at me, I walk into the AA meeting, a guy comes up to me right away, one of the prisoners. And he says, Anthony, thank God you're here, man. They weren't going to let us have an AA meeting if we didn't show up. I never thought about those guys the whole time. I never thought about those guys when I was sitting outside. I never thought about those guys when I was walking through the metal detector. Never thought about those guys when I was going by the women yelling at me. All I thought about was Anthony. You better believe that was a hell of a good AA meeting. And you better believe when I left that AA meeting, man, did I love my wife more than I did before I got there. man, did I love my job more than I did before I got there. I love my little terrible car way more than I did before I got there. And I found out that the commitments that I have in AA are critical to me, because left to my own devices, I won't go. I'll be like, I'll go tomorrow, you know? So understanding that I have to be hooked in, I have to be connected to maintain a channel between Anthony and God has been really, really critical to me. I have a home group. Yeah, my home group is 9:30 a.m. It's called Recovery on the Mountain. The reason I said that we changed names is because we actually moved it to the Valley. So it's in the Valley now, but I'm the coffee maker there whenever we get coffee back. We're doing a hybrid meeting right now, so I'm the technology guy. So I go into the meeting and I work with that part of the meeting. I still have a commitment. I go to the prison. I've been going to prisons for 25 years now straight. We got kicked out of the prisons when the pandemic hit. So I have not been back in the prison for the last year, but that's once a month commitment. I sponsor a lot of guys. And I'm going to tell you, I had no interest in sponsoring guys. I'll tell you that right now. I thought I sucked at it. I couldn't figure it out. There was a guy who was dying, who was living across the street from me, who I hated. All he did was wash his car and drink Bush beer and tell me how much sex he had with his wife and how much money he made. And I was like, man, I hate this dude. And my wife was friends with his wife. And my wife called me at work one day and she said, Anthony, can you call Mike? Betty said he's going to commit suicide. I said, okay, I'll call Mike. So I called Mike. I said, what's going on? He said, I'm going to commit suicide. I said, why? He said, I can't stop. I'm going crazy, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, does it have anything to do with drinking? He said, no, I quit drinking 2 weeks ago. I said, well, look, I'll pick you up, take you to an AA meeting. He goes, well, aren't you at work? I said, yeah, I'll leave work right now, man. I'll pick you up right now. He said, okay. I picked him up. He asked me to be a sponsor. I really disliked him. He never shut up. He would go to meetings and say, my sponsor told me this, and it would be something I never said ever in my entire life. You know, I felt like I wanted to get up and make the record straight, but I knew that wasn't my business. And he was the first guy that ever went through all the steps. I think I had 10 years of sobriety. And he was the first guy that went through all the steps. He's still sober today, this guy, still sober. Because of his gregariousness, my sponsor is Anthony. All these guys started to ask me to sponsor him. And they saved my life. You know, AA is a bottom-up program. What I mean by that is that God doesn't flow down through Anthony to his sponsees. God flows up from the sponsees through Anthony. AA is not here to serve you. AA is here for you to serve. And when you understand that you have this superpower called honesty, and then when you share that with another man and they find out they're not the only person that feels that way, that opens up a channel for God. It opens up a channel for a spiritual awakening. And when you're part of that process, it fixed me. And one more story, you know, I was coaching, I was working two jobs. I was going to lots of AA meetings. We had three boys that were within 4 years. So it was crazy. And I went to a meeting and a guy came up to me and said, Anthony, man, there's a guy named Steve. He's over in the kitchen. And the kitchen was about, I don't know, 25 feet from where I was sitting. He needs a sponsor. And so I went over there. The whole time I'm walking to the kitchen, I kept saying, I'm not going to sponsor this guy. I can't sponsor this guy. I'm too busy. I can't sponsor him. One of the guys I sponsor, I'll get that guy to sponsor it. That's what I'll do. But I'm definitely not going to sponsor him. I went up. Dude said, hey, man, my name's Steve. I need help. Can you sponsor me? And I said, yes. I don't know why I said yes. But I'll tell you what happened. Steve kicked my ass. Steve was so energetic. Steve went through the book. He wanted to know everything about the steps. We went through the book harder than I ever did in my life. He saved my life during that period. I was so wrapped up in Anthony's stuff, Anthony's kids, Anthony's coaching, Anthony's jobs, Anthony's money, Anthony's house. Steve pulled me out. Steve did a special thing for me. We got to the third step and we were sitting at a Mexican restaurant. He said, okay, we're at the third step. What do we do? I said, well, you know, we say this prayer together. He said, okay, let's do it. Let's do it right now. And I was like, I didn't tell Steve this, but I don't pray in public. You know what I mean? What are people going to think? But I was afraid to tell Steve that I didn't pray in public, but I was terrified. Steve like reached across the table with his hands. He's like, I say the prayer now. So I grabbed Steve's hand. I said, okay, let's say the prayer. So I closed my eyes. I said the prayer with Steve in public. And Steve freed me up, man. I can pray with anybody in public now. I didn't know I could pray in public. I was so embarrassed and worried about it. But these little things that people have taught me changed my life. If it wasn't for Steve, I wouldn't have learned that. And I was so busy that day, I shouldn't have never had to sponsor Steve, but I did. So my connection is that I stay very close. I walk guys through the steps. All right. So I have a sponsor and my sponsor has a sponsor. But when I sponsor a guy, I walk him through the steps. And one of the things that's important to me is to help these guys understand what's AA and what's not AA. There's a tremendous amount of myths when you go to AA meetings, just a tremendous amount. And it's very confusing. Go to 90 and 90. Why? What does that mean? It has nothing to do with AA, nothing. It doesn't have anything to do with 12 steps. It's an interesting suggestion and it may be helpful for somebody, but it has nothing to do with the 12 steps. You know, my goal is to walk a guy through the 12 steps. And what I do when I take a guy through the 12 steps, I ask him from the beginning a couple things. I say, look, I'm going to respect everything you tell me. It's between me and you. It's confidential. My wife doesn't get to hear about it. Nobody hears about it. It's your business. I'll talk to my other sponsees about it. But if I'm going to walk you through the steps, are you willing to walk the next guy through the steps? Because this isn't an AA degree program. You're not going to get your AA 12-step certificate and hang it on your wall and say, thank you very much. I got a great job, a great wife, and I'm great now. Because every time I see that happen, those guys don't make it. I want you to tell me now, are you willing to pass this on? I'm going to give you a template, a spiritual fitness template, just like a trainer does at the gym. And then you're going to pass it on to the next guy. And I'll help you, but you're going to pass it on. And that's what we do, man. We get together and I put it on the calendar. I say, look, you want me to sponsor you? Okay, what day is good? Okay, every Wednesday. Every Wednesday we get together at this time. Should I call you every day? I heard you're supposed to call your sponsor every day. I don't care if you call me every day. I would never call anybody every day, especially if someone told me that because I'm too defiant. I mean, call me if you want or text me if you want, but just be here and let's do the steps together. That's what we got to do. You know, what other myths, you know, I heard I'm not supposed to make any big decisions in my first year of sobriety. Who can get through a year of sobriety without making a big decision? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I shouldn't get in any relationships. I'm not a relationship guy. I have no business giving you any information on that. I will walk you through the steps. Okay, that's what we're going to do. We're going to walk through the steps. So that's what we do. We walk through the steps together and man, it makes a big difference to me. I mean, I learned so much from these guys. It's incomprehensible. And my relationship with God continues to grow and continues to grow. And one of the things I've found is that when I lose my singleness of purpose, my purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. But when I start to think my purpose is to be the best husband in the world, then I've just pissed my wife off. She's like, why are you up my ass? What is going on? Hey, babe, is there anything I can do for you? Are you doing okay? If I think my purpose is to be the best father ever, my kids are like, dude, what are you doing, man? Why are you all over me? Like, what's going on? My purpose is to be the best person at work. People at work are like, dude, just chill, okay? Because I get all over things. When my purpose is to help the alcoholic who still suffers, I get the privilege to be a husband and the privilege to be a father and the privilege to be an employee and a colleague at work. And everything works so much better. But I always flip it or I always mess it up, right? I mean, I'm human and I get all messed up. And then I sit down with one of these guys and they explain the problem they're going through. And I realize, that's the same thing that's happened to me right now, you know? So I would say this program has given me tremendous purpose because I can touch another alcoholic who still suffers. And I didn't know I could be of that kind of value before.
That's so beautiful. No, both of us have really enjoyed listening. Thank you so much. This has been an amazing conversation and super enlightening. And I just love the God doesn't flow through me to the suffering alcoholic. God flows from the suffering alcoholic. I'm helping into me. And I think that is so cool. So as we wrap, Anthony, is there any final thought that you want to make sure our listeners hear before we close?
I'll tell one quick story about Floyd. So I was at a meeting. I was my home group. It was a 7:30 a.m. meeting. And a guy comes in. He's really, really drunk. It's about 7:45. I mean, he's so drunk, he can barely sit down. So he sits next to me and I said, yo, man, you okay? So I was like, and about 10 minutes later, he gets up to leave. And so I run out after him. And I'm like, dude, you cannot drive. You're wrecked. I said, give me your keys. I'll run back in and I'll get somebody else and we'll drive. I'll follow you home with your car and then we'll take you home safely. And he said, all right. And so I did. We took him home, Floyd. And then I would pick Floyd up for meetings. And I'd get to his house and his daughters, these beautiful teenage daughters of his, they would be like, oh, Mr. Anthony, sorry if Floyd's drunk again, you know, he can't make it. All right. And so I worked with Floyd for maybe 2 years and maybe he got 3 months of sobriety and then, you know, on and off. After I lost touch with Floyd, 3 or 4 years later, I got a call and I looked at my phone and it was his wife, Alice, right? And I was like, oh my gosh, Alice, what's going on? How are you? It's so good to hear from you. She said, Anthony, I found your phone number. I was cleaning out some of Floyd's stuff. I want to let you know he passed away. I said, oh, Alice, I'm so sorry. How are the girls? She's like, they're doing good. They're doing great. She said, what I wanted to tell you is that when he passed away, he had 2 years of sobriety. I know you spent so much time coming over here and he never got sober and he struggled, but I thought you'd want to hear that. And it was so important to me just to remind me that I don't know what I don't know. You know, and a lot of times we work with guys and it's not going well, right, by our judgment. But I'm not the judge of that. And I think that Alice's phone call just reminded me that every little thing we do for each other matters. It always matters. It always matters. So don't stop. Keep putting your hand out to pull up that next drunk. We're not the judge of whether or not what we're doing is working or not. So I think it's just important to understand that. To not put too much pressure on ourselves as the messengers. The message is you can have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, but we're not the judge of when or how that might happen.
Well, Anthony, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us. I've gotten so much out of our chat. Thank you.
Thank you for stepping up, Anthony.
Welcome. Thanks for keeping me sober tonight. Appreciate it. I needed it out here. It's a lot different than what I normally do for a living, and it's gotten me out of my normal schedule. So it's nice to be connected like this tonight with both of you. It really makes a big difference to me, and I really appreciate the God flowing from you into me, because I needed it.
Coming right back at us.
Thanks so much for listening. If you want to find us online, you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Daily Reflection Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Reflector. You can read stories of recovery from our community at blog.dailyreflectionpodcast.com. Please don't forget to give us a rating on your podcast app. We greatly appreciate it. Have a great day. This podcast produced by Lee McGinnis and Michael Lynn. Audio editing services by Jeff Bain.